This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Hello and welcome to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. My name's Adam and I'm an alcoholic. The purpose of this show is to increase public awareness of Alcoholics Anonymous as an effective means of recovery from the disease of alcoholism. Our show has two parts. First, we'll talk a bit about alcoholism, what it is and what AA can do to help. Then we'll interview a recovering alcoholic who is an active member of AA. I'm now going to ask our guest to read the AA preamble, which is read at the start of every AA meeting. Take it away, mate.
Hi, I'm Patrick, alcoholic. AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There is no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thanks, Patrick. So what is alcoholism? Alcoholism is a disease, not a disgrace. There's no shame in having an illness or a disease. An unusual feature of this disease is that it will do whatever it can to convince you that you do not have it. However, once it has a hold of you, the progression of symptoms is like the classic disease model when the victim becomes as helpless as a sufferer of cancer. So if you are an alcoholic, like me, you are at the beginning of a long road that usually ends untreated in one of three places: prisons, institutions, or death. If you think this sounds dramatic, we can assure you that our collective experience has shown this to be true. The challenge is to convince the alcoholic to admit that they need help and become willing to seek it. Denial is a major symptom of alcoholism. The alcoholic's often the last one to recognise it and admit that they have it. Our definition of alcoholism is that it is an allergy of the body coupled with an obsession of the mind. The allergy is the physical aspect of the disease. After having the first drink, the phenomenon of craving develops and we lose control over when we will stop drinking. The old saying is, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. Yet, because of the obsession of the mind, the mental aspect of the disease, the alcoholic is compelled to keep picking up the first drink. This makes us powerless. We often hear from sober alcoholics that many doubted whether life could be fun without alcohol. Fortunately, those same people report that their lives have improved dramatically since they became sober. The 12-step program of recovery, which is discussed at AA meetings and which is outlined in the Alcoholics Anonymous Big Book, is how we get sober and maintain our sobriety, one day at a time. This program has a proven track record of helping otherwise hopeless alcoholics to achieve long-term sobriety and recovery. It has taught us how to enjoy life sober. Hi there, for anyone who has just joined us, you're listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show here on Plains FM 96.9. We're just about to interview an AA member who is going to share his experience with alcoholism with us. Hello guest, would you like to introduce yourself and give us a quick sketch of who you are, mate?
Hi, my name's Patrick and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a builder by trade who is now studying at ARA in Christchurch.
Yes. How old are you, mate?
I am 43.
Yes, and how long have you been sober for?
I've been sober for 5.5 months.
Great stuff, fantastic stuff. And do you have a family?
I am one of 8 children.
Yes.
And
That's a biggie.
I'm single, and I have 3 boys.
You got 3 sons?
Yes.
Yes, I see. And where are you from, mate?
I'm originally from Invercargill. Scattered myself around New Zealand and in Australia in the past, and I've been based in Christchurch since 2011.
I see, cool. And how would you describe your childhood?
My childhood, one of eight children. And
where were you in the pecking order of that?
Number four,
right, yep. Right bang in the middle.
Yep, in the middle. I remember my childhood as, you know, I don't see positives in my childhood. And it's something I've talked to my brothers and sisters about. I am the only one that sees my childhood being negative.
Right.
Yeah.
So you look through and remember your childhood with a negative lens, but your other seven siblings don't.
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Can you be more specific about why you had such a bugbear about your childhood there?
Like, I believe, you know, there was 2 years between me and my brother older than me.
Yes.
And then 2 years between each one above them. And so my younger brother, one younger than me, he was born when I was 4 years old. And, you know, I believe that I had all the attention for those 4 years. And then all of a sudden, it was taken away.
Yes.
And, my childhood, in a way, was good. You know, my parents were always there. They were always encouraging. They always wanted the best for me.
Yes.
It was positive. I was saying before, it was negative. And probably since this time around in AA, I've been able to see some of the positive stuff and people have told me the positive stuff of my childhood. But, you know, before that, I never saw it. I couldn't see it. I didn't want to see it.
It says in the AA big book that us alcoholics are super sensitive, a little bit grandiose, and a little bit self-centered. And that's what was the thing for me, is I would often bear grudges over the smallest thing, you know, and think about what I didn't get and didn't receive, and I would forget to be grateful, you know, and it's something that I've had to retrain, my consciousness into. Yeah. When did you start drinking, Patrick, and how did it progress?
My drinking started when I was about 13 or 14.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was a group of us that used to go down to the running track in Invercargill, and would get a couple of riggers each, and I'd...
That's quite a bit for a 13-year-old.
Yes, it is. And Mum and Dad always thought I was just staying at my friend's place.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend was, this is so 13, 14, and this is when the age of drinking was 20, and you couldn't buy from a liquor store until you're 20. So my friend was able to purchase us alcohol. And we used to go into one of the referees' rooms and drink these riggers. And straight away I was blacking out. It was just straight away drinking as fast as I could.
And what did alcohol do for you, Patrick?
Why
were you drinking?
Why was I drinking? It was to fit in. When I was at school, I was, you know, I wasn't an academic kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggled with, you know, my self-esteem and with everything, really. I struggled with self-esteem and just everything that I just couldn't cope with. Friendships. And it helped me fit in. It helped me fit in.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. And you said something about how you were drinking intensively, intensive binge drinking to battle blackout. Did you ever get to, when did you get to daily drinking, or did you ever get to daily drinking?
So when I started at Polytech in Invercargill for doing my building apprenticeship, I used to work on Fridays. And that's where my drinking kind of kicked off at the age of 16, 17. And I would go to the pub with the guys from work, or would be on site getting 24, put $5 in and get a couple of 24 packs. And I saw that, you know, there was three or four bottles each, and it was just drink them as fast as possible so you possibly could get the extra one, you know.
Like, right. So you were very greedy for the alcohol.
I watched other people drink and I wanted to fit in with them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just drinking the way everyone else did on a building site, really.
Oh, okay. But you were trying to get one ahead.
I was always
even
getting
at age 16 when you were an absolute junior in terms of age. Did you ever feel it was a problem? Did you ever try to stop?
When I started getting into trouble with the police used to ask me, "Do you think you got a drinking problem?" And I couldn't see it myself.
Oh yeah, and what sort of trouble were you getting into?
So I was getting started off with. First occasion was at the age of 17, and I was told I had thrown a beer bottle out a window, out a driving vehicle window, and it had just missed a cyclist. So at the time, my father made me own up to it.
Mm.
To this day, I do not remember doing it.
Yep.
But my father said I had to own up to it because everyone blamed me.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first conviction, was littering, with littering, really, mm-hmm. dangerous littering or
okay, but
similar.
It led on, that wasn't your only
misdemeanor? Yeah, after that,
when
I was at Polytech, I used to get into fights on the weekends. And a bit of that was lack of communication, and so I would fix it with my fists, really.
Right.
And that continued on probably over a period of 3 years while I was doing my apprenticeship, to fights, disorderly behaviour, threatening behaviour, until the time come that I was getting PD and Mum kind of said that maybe it's time to head out of town.
Right, so you did what's known as a geographical.
Yes, I did.
You left the environment.
I did.
So what made you realise that you needed help? Do you have a rock bottom? Would you describe it?
I probably have a few rock bottoms, you know. My father died when I was 17.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wouldn't say, you know, even at his funeral, I was in a blackout. I've gone through court many a times. You know, every time I travel overseas, I have to, you know, to go to America, I have to get special visas.
So you had quite a lot of heavy, heavy grief when you were 17,
yeah,
with your dad, but it sounds like you didn't stop drinking until much later. What made you realise ultimately, apart from court orders and stuff like that, that you needed help? I mean, you've had some trouble with the law. Yeah, what brought you to putting it down or realising the demon drink was a problem for you?
Well, I've had people, like I said before, I've had police ask me if I had drinking problems.
Yeah.
No one gave me a solution. I didn't know a solution. I went, you know, I've gone from city to city in New Zealand, over to Australia, getting into the same trouble, and then coming to Christchurch. You know, I had a period of time when my kids were younger that I didn't get into trouble with police. I was still drinking the same, still doing the same things, still the abusive behaviours when I was drinking. But, you know, back in, it was 2016, I found, you know, I was having a rocky time in my marriage, and my wife, you know, kind of, I got one night after a beer festival, I ended up getting locked up again. You know, I ended up in courts again on bail, and you know that wasn't enough. You know, I didn't drink when I was on bail, but I still struggled, and you know, in that time when I on bail in 2016, I had a, you know, I was having suicidal thoughts. You know, at the time I had three young boys I couldn't see due to the bail conditions. And it was, April 2016, and I was staying at a friend's place who was living in Hamilton, and I, you know, I got on the drink that night by myself in this house. And the next, you know, I kind of remember it, but I hopped into her car and it didn't start. It had a flat battery. And the next day my wife at the time, came around and she found a bottle of red wine and a half a dozen beers in the car and asked me what I'd been up to. And I said I was just going for a drive and the car didn't start. You know, and, you know, I believe that was a God moment, you know, that car having a flat battery. And, you know, further down the year, my wife ended up taking me back in for a period of time. And later in the year, we decided enough was enough and we separated. And I ended up coming round to her house one night and walking through the unlocked door, grabbing her round the throat, and then hopping in my car after she asked me to leave, and scaring her and the boys again, and driving back to, at the time I was living in my office, driving back to my office, and I was drunk, had locked myself in between the office and the storage shed in this unit, and the police arrived and, you know, talked me out, got me outside and arrested me. I got charged for assault and drink driving and ended up in courts. And at the time I was trying to get, I went to the men's centre and I was trying to get out of trouble, so to make myself look better, really. And so I went and saw a counsellor at the men's centre. They kind of instructed me, maybe you've got a drinking problem. And we have the AA centre below us, so I went down there. I did not know anything about AA. So that was my first knowledge.
You got a word of mouth referral from a counsellor to AA.
Yep.
And so did you go to an AA meeting?
So there was two guys in this meeting, and they told me their story. I told them my story, and they, one of them asked me to come along to a meeting. So it was December 2016.
Yep.
On a Wednesday night, I went to my first meeting. When I arrived, the guy that met me there, he was like very surprised I had turned up.
Yep. And what were they like? How did they treat you, these guys?
I went into the meeting and, you know, straight away I recognised myself as an alcoholic. And they all treated me nicely. I had one guy brought me a book, big book that day, and gave it to me after the meeting. I was told to do 90 meetings in 90 days.
Yep.
I had a lady say to me, come to 90 meetings in 90 days, and if it's not for you, we'll refund your misery and I'll drive you back to the nearest pub.
So how did you feel going into AA? It sounds like you felt quite welcomed.
I'm a pretty emotional person, and, you know, that meeting, that first meeting, I cried. I realised the destruction that I've caused throughout my life.
Yeah, it's pretty intense, isn't it? Pretty consuming, my alcoholism was.
Yeah, and, you know, in that time, you know, and that, you know, I ended up getting 7 months up, and I didn't do any steps. I listened, I shared. You know, and I believe I come in for the wrong reasons. You know, I come in because I was trying to get out of a bind. I was trying to get a lesser sentence in the courts.
Yes.
So I managed to get 7 months up, and then I went on a family holiday with my ex-wife and my three sons to the Gold Coast. And while I was in the, you know, Gold Coast, I bought a Corona, and, you know, I sat there and looked at it for 10 minutes before, you know, before I picked it up and drank it.
Yeah, and was it a case of one is too many and 1,000 is not enough?
Yeah, it was, you know, it wasn't enough, you know. I that night, I drank, I gambled. You know, I went back to where I was, had been straight away.
Yeah.
You know, and it was when I, you know, in that time when I picked up, I said I'd never let my children see me drink again. And, you know, they've seen me drink, you know, over that period of time. You know, I went to my sister's wedding in Auckland, and I was drinking, but I went to that wedding on Waiheke Island for a week, and in that week I didn't drink, but I was batshit crazy, you know. And over that weekend, you know, when we got back, me and the three boys got back to Auckland, I started drinking in front of them. You know, we'd go out for dinner.
So you had an erosion of your good intentions, and you broke your word because you were drinking again, because probably are an alcoholic like me.
Yeah, I just couldn't help myself at the end of the day. It was that, like you say, one led on to many more, yes. You know. And
it's certainly been the case for me. So you haven't had a drink for 5 months now. How have you managed to stay sober? What have you done to ensure your sobriety this time around?
So this time around, so I've had stints of 7 months, just about 2 years. And this time around, you know, I hit my rock bottom on the 13th of February to this year. And, you know, I've come in, I've been willing to do the steps, you know. I've been in these rooms since 2016 and I didn't want to do the steps.
Yeah.
You know, I've been willing to do the steps. I've been, you know, I've found some acceptance. You know, I've found, you know, acceptance in a Gambling Anonymous meeting.
Yep, great.
And, you know, and it was explained to me in a way by an older gentleman, in a way that I understood acceptance.
Yeah.
And from that day, you know, I found acceptance. I've been able to surrender in the last 5.5 months. Surrender and actually, you know, surrender to my higher power.
Yes. Now, how would you describe yourself in the life that you've got today? Do you feel different inside?
Yeah, I do feel a lot different. You know, I still struggle with anxiety and fears and that, and, you know,
yes.
I'm even today very nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And but they're not as bad as what they were, you know, 6 months ago.
That's amazing. And have your relationships changed?
My relationships, you know,
with your ex-wife, your kids.
Yeah, my ex-wife have changed. With other people, they've changed. You know, my three boys. You know, I was never there for them over their lives. You know, and it's my 13-year-old son who has seen the worst of my drinking, to the 10 and 8-year-old that haven't seen the worst. So I've got a lot of work to do on myself, and a lot of changing to do,
yep,
to make a better life for them.
But you're more present for them, eh?
I am a lot more present for them, yeah. Mm. So I have my boys 50-50 care with my ex-wife.
It's great. They'll benefit from that massively.
Yeah, and when I first come into AA, I went a year without seeing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was in my addiction, I tried to coach one of my son's rugby, and I was never present there, present with all the boys, including my son. But over this season, and in the last couple of months, I've been able to start coaching again. And
fantastic.
Yeah, and I've been able to actually be present with the kids and get involved with them and encourage them, really.
That's fantastic. So you're doing service to these young guys.
I am, yes.
You're giving back.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. You're mentoring.
Yeah, and yeah. It is, and it's something that I enjoy and I want to do more of.
Wonderful. Well, all the very best. Thank you so much, Patrick, for coming on the show and sharing your story with us, mate.
Thanks.
For our listeners, if you've related to anything that you've heard or would like some more information about Alcoholics Anonymous, you can look us up on the web at aa.org.nz or call us on 0800 AA Works. There are over 60 meetings a week in Canterbury, so it's likely there's one near you. Join us next week to hear from more AA members sharing their experiences. Our show airs every Monday at 5:30 on Plains FM and repeats on Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. You can find podcasts of all our past shows on the Plains FM website at plainsfm.org.nz, or you can download and subscribe to podcasts on iTunes. That brings us to the end of the show. Thank you for listening, and remember, if you want to drink, that's your business, but if you want to stop, we can help. You don't have to do it alone. We will now close the show with a serenity prayer, as we do in every AA meeting. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. You've been listening to the Alcoholics Anonymous radio show on Plains FM 96.9.